Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm Michael Steele. Yes, I'm still a Republican, despite what people are saying out there. And there's a good reason for that. We'll get into a little bit today because I'm excited to have this brother on with me who is doing yeoman's work. He was a trailblazer in the 2008 campaign, bringing back the McCain campaign from very, very dark corners for a campaign at the time to the nomination, and is now working to kind of save the country from a lot of the crazy that we've seen. He's none other than Steve Schmidt, one of the most respected strategists and incisive voices in our politics today, known widely for his senior roles advising President Bush, George W., and certainly John McCain in his campaign in 2008. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. So he has built the bona fides, as it were, to talk the way he talks and to walk the way he walks. And as I remembered the day he announced he was leaving the party, I was like, brother, no, don't leave me alone. Don't leave me alone. He's still a good conservative voice out there for some strong principles, and I'm glad he's with us. He is one of the founding leaders of the Lincoln Project, which I've been honored to join up with over the last month. And Steve, welcome back to the podcast, bro.
Good to be with you.
Absolutely.
It's incredible, all those nice things. I work in politics. No one's supposed to say nice things.
Well, you know what? And that's one of the sad parts of it, because they're good people trying to do good things in politics. And you remember how that used to work. And I think that's what animates a lot of your passion around what's going on right now, because we do remember how it used to work. We could go toe-to-toe with Democrats on virtually every issue in the world. But at the end of the day, we knew we had to build a consensus around those ideas to reach a result that would benefit the people. And I've talked to a lot of people about the Lincoln Project and the work that it's done and is doing. And that's actually kind of what they say. You know, they get the effort to go out there and try to remind us of these bigger, more important ideas about the country. How have you found it? Before we get into the debate this week, because I've been kind of holding back on that. That's the easy go-to. But just kind of help set the conversation a little bit around the animus, the motivation of Lincoln Project, and why that voice, those ads, are so important right now as we're 30-some days out from the election.
Well, look, I think going all the way back to the fall when we started it, we talked about this on more than one occasion, how alarmed we were watching the Democratic debates, that there was a word and a name that we just never heard. And the name was Trump and the word was Trumpism.
Right.
And we have a point of view that the first, second, and third issues and the next 155 after that in this race are Trump. And that's what the debate made totally clear. And so over the last year and for some time before that, I think a lot of us have been warning about the threat that Trump poses to the country, to America's standing in the world, to our security. Over 2020, to life itself, as his lethal lie has killed so many Americans, his downplaying the coronavirus, but his assaults on institutions, his assaults on the rule of law. There's a word, it's called illiberal, which means undemocratic. And so political philosophy at some level matters, not to digress, but both American parties, just to put a pen in it for a second, are classically liberal political parties who fight alongside a divide along certain principles about the size and role and power of government, amongst them about the role of the country in the world, but under an umbrella of general agreement that we're a constitutional republic with guaranteed freedoms, we're a country of rules and laws, and that there is no person in the country above or below the rule of law. That's everybody's supposed to agree to that. So coming back, you know, the Lincoln Project has made the argument that he is dangerously undemocratic.
Yeah.
And you look in the mirror sometimes and check yourself. I don't want to be hysterical. I want to be a reasonable voice in American politics. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be an inflammatory voice. I don't want to be a hyperbolic voice with the use of language. But I think he is the worst president in American history. I think his lie is the most lethal lie. And I think that he is the most profound threat to our democracy, given the fact that he has called militia groups, extremist groups, fascist groups, white supremacist groups to the ready.
Yep.
To the ready. Make no mistake about it. What he said was lock and load. Weapons at the ready. You may have to fight. Who are you fighting?
Right.
This is his rolling Reichstag fire, by the way. Another inflammatory, invisible, make-believe enemy. In 2018, just so you get an understanding of how it feels to be in the pot as the water's boiling, right? Mm-hmm. 2018, it was the caravan, right? He yep. talked about the caravan like it was the German army, 10 That's Panzer right. divisions about to break through the border. He deployed active duty combat units of the U.S. military to the southern border
yep.
in the face of desperately poor, thirsty, and starving refugees. And now it's Antifa, which his own FBI director says is an ideology without formal organization.
Right.
But these militia groups, there's no shortage of former military, former police officers, law enforcement who have training, along with the wannabes. You know, we got a 17-year-old who drove, his mom drove with his AR-15 from Illinois to Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
He killed two people, shot a third, sat in the front row of a Trump rally, was radicalized by all this nonsense and conspiracy theory. He's now celebrated in the extreme right. His face is on T-shirts, and he's celebrated as an American folk hero by the Fox News host. And so what the Lincoln Project has said for a long time is, man, we're seeing where this ends.
Yeah.
And this yeah. is a real threat to the American experiment. This is an autocrat. This is a dangerous person. And we should take him literally and seriously, and we need to fight back ferociously and remind people about what's at stake in this.
And that to me has been the driver for quite some time now. And it amazes me, and you touch on it, that people sort of succumb to this sort of nationalist view of America. And part of me gets the sort of desperation that attends that, you know, people find a way to sort of make an excuse or to project onto others because of their own particular circumstances. But I also get the sense there's something deeper going on in the American psyche, which is why I think the ads and the narrative that comes out of Lincoln Project is so important. Because it is that moonstruck moment when you get slapped out of it. You know, when you see the ad Morning in America, for example, which is perhaps one of my favorite, because it cut right to the core of the COVID-19 discussion people were trying to avoid. And certainly Trump completely ignored. And we saw that in the debate this week as well. A further playing out of that. And it manifested itself in a number of moments. But the key moment, which you've already alluded to, was when he was asked directly about, do you reject white nationalism? And then I listened. And so his answer is what it is. We all kind of know what it's going to be. It's going to be bullshit. We get it, right? But then what gets me, Steve, is currently elected officials sitting around having this conversation the way they're having it, as if, oh, well, he just misspoke. He just kind of, you know, didn't mean it. I'm like, this man is a 70-something-year-old white guy born out of the, you know, made out of the 50s, you know? Come on. What do you mean he didn't know what he was talking about that he misspoke? How do you misspeak when you're asked the question, do you reject white nationalism? So what is the country, what is it about all of that that the country still buys or buys into? Why does that seem to not jar them enough to say, holy hell, what are we doing?
You know, there was an observation made by a German in the aftermath of the war that was commented on recently by a German commentator who made the point that, you know, we learned as a country that a third of the country was willing to kill the other third of the country while a third of the country watched by silently. And so we have to face a reality, and it's that the Republican Party as it exists today, and you stand outside now the boundary of the Republican Party as the former chairman and active in all of this, maybe its most important dissident. And so while I think it was appropriate for me to leave the Republican Party, I think it's important that you stay in the Republican Party. And, you know, it's a much longer conversation.
Right.
But the Republican Party is no longer a classically liberal party. There was a study this week that places it much more in proximity to the far right neo-fascistic movements that you see in Orban's Hungary, in Poland, the Le Pen movement in France. And so you look at the state of the party right now, it's not just that he encouraged all of these groups, and we should look at what the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys and the white supremacists say about the debate. They are ecstatic about it. You know, they were called to the line by Trump, and make no mistake, they're prepared to do violence in his name. This McGinnis, who is not a U.S. citizen and is the founder of the Proud Boys. Let me ask you a question. If his name was Adel El Salam from Egypt, right, and he was rounding up young Arab men, violence, right?
Look,
how quickly do you think we'd have him out of the country?
Oh my God! These same white folks who are touting this motherfucker would have been losing their damn minds. Right?
This guy should be deported. He should be out of here. He's a threat, but. But it's the combination of three things: the threat to the peaceful transition of power, the threat to the integrity of the election process, and the unwillingness to accept a result of the popular and sovereign will of the American people. And there's the call to violence in these groups to maintain power illegitimately. Right. All three of these things are happening in the moment, and they demand condemnation because they are profoundly un-American. The peaceful transition of power in all of human history is one of the great miracles.
Yeah.
It's almost magical. For this long, the oldest constitutional republic in the world. And as our friend and colleague Reed Galen pointed out, George Washington gets all the credit here. Right, in the sense that he was once asked, King George III was asked what would Washington do? And he was told that he would go back to his farm. He couldn't believe it. Washington became the first human being to give up power in 2,000 years. He could have been a king, could have been an emperor. And George III said, well, that will make him the greatest man of this or any age.
Yeah.
But the first president who matters in this is John Adams. He's the first president who lost an election.
Yeah.
And he ceded the office to Thomas Jefferson. And this is what we do. This is what makes us special.
That's right.
What is American exceptionalism? I'm going to tell you what it is. It's not about white people. It's about the power of an idea. Mm-hmm. And it's about a power of an idea and an ideal that has expanded to include everybody imperfectly. That all men are created equal and endowed by a creator with inalienable rights, amongst them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We're the only country in the world where every language is spoken every day. We're the only country in the world made up of all the peoples from every country in the world. And that country, our country, imperfect though it may be, has done more good in the world, has fed more people, has cured more people, has liberated more people than all the other countries of the world put together since the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. We're the most generous people in the world. We're a nation of adventurers and explorers and scientists, of builders, of dreamers, of free people, lighting the world with this idea that in a free land, anyone from anywhere who works hard and plays by the rules can make it and live their own American dream. That's the business that we're supposed to be in. And the idea that we would lay that down at the feet of Donald Trump,
I know,
threatening violence. We will have a transition of power if he loses. But there's only been one time in the history of the country where there's been a question before this around the peaceful mm-hmm. transition of power. It was around the inaugural of Abraham Lincoln. The president of the United States is suggesting we will not have a peaceful transition of power if he loses. Like we're some sort of third-rate banana republic.
Yeah, he's very clear about that.
It's disgraceful in the cowardice of the people that have enabled this and refuse to condemn it. And I'm sorry, but starting with Tim Scott, only black Republican in the United States Senate who thinks that Trump misspoke, are you shitting me?
I know. It's
outrageous.
Profoundly stunning moment. And just to say it so offhandedly was what I found so disheartening, knowing Tim and having helped him in his 2010 race to Congress, and knowing, well, at least what that Tim Scott would have said in a moment like this. So you've got all these various philosophical and value set ideas, principles that have been sort of disintegrated away from the American idea. I love the way you expressed the American dream there, because that in essence is what it's all about. And the interesting part of that is it's something that applied to the free man and to the slave, to the immigrant, to the natural born. It was not something that you could easily cherry pick or something you could, decide works for some and not for others. So when you look at this moment and you try to understand, and I do get the frustration that some Americans have, and that a lot of Americans have about the way things are for them and the way things have been for them and the feeling that they've been lied to. How do we, on the other side of this conversation that we're having, that will be answered arguably on November 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, of this year, we call that the election period. On the other side of that, how do we begin to address some of those things in a way that promotes the healing as opposed to giving more ground to the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys and all these other wannabe boys?
Well, I think it's made a lot easier by a profound rebuke electorally, a humiliation where it's just a wipeout.
Mm-hmm.
And, you look at the numbers right now in a state like Texas, in a state like Georgia, there's a lot of evidence to suggest the ground is coming out from underneath Trump and
right.
and all of his enablers. I think Joe Biden has all the requisite quality of character to begin to heal the country.
To do that healing.
One of my favorites, what's true about the country, almost providentially, is it's produced the right leaders at the right times. It's Dwight Eisenhower was a colonel in the Army in 1940. Hadn't been promoted in 13 years. Rosa Parks was just a lady too tired to get up and move to the back of the bus, you know, and
right.
And then there is just an ordinary guy, right, who rises to become a moral giant, you know, who's a young pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church.
Right, exactly.
And one of my favorite stories is William Tecumseh Sherman, who's a colonel in the Union Army. At the beginning of the war, he writes a letter to a good friend of his who is completely down and out on his luck, had left the army with a drinking problem. He was selling firewood on a street corner, and he wrote that letter to his friend Ulysses Grant, saying that he thought Lincoln was a backwoods barbarian, that, you know, he was uneducated, he had no capacity to deal with the issues confronting the Union and its disintegration. And he last saw Lincoln with Grant at City Point, Virginia, on the headwaters of the James River, shortly before the war ended. And he recalled Lincoln after his assassination. He said, "Of all the great men, and I've met them all, the emperors, the kings, the industrialists, I've met no man who possessed more of the qualities of greatness and goodness than Abraham Lincoln." And so I think when you look at Joe Biden's life, he's 77 years old, run for president for the third time. He's running this time because Donald Trump is the president, and he felt like he had a step forward, a man who's been immensely shaped by tragedy, who's had to, in a way that's like, it's his life and the tragedies, I think, for all of us are the place like we don't want to go to in our darkest nightmares, right? Yeah. And he's looked into the abyss, but still sees hope, still has retained his faith and his optimism. I think he has all the qualities and signal he's going to be the president of all of the people. And I think that as we look at the tremendous damage that's been done, the tremendous amount of work that needs to be done, and the things that obviously need to be fixed, if government can start to function, to do what it's supposed to do, to deliver the services competently that it's supposed to do, if we can pragmatically look at the parts of the country that are in real trouble, that have been left behind, right? If we can focus on how to help people, if we can talk about questions of fairness, right? What's fair?
Yeah.
What's right?
Yeah.
Think it's fair that Donald Trump paid $750 in taxes last year, right? Well, what do you think happens when you have hundreds of thousands of pages in a tax code? Each page,
right?
Each page is an act of corruption.
Yep.
Right. Each page is an act of corruption. Right. You know, so much to be done, you know, and I hopefully we'll see over time a reemergence of people of good faith to do it. But Trumpism isn't going away.
Nope.
And the Republican Party is going to get more extreme and more dangerous, even in defeat, before it starts to heal and get better, if it survives at all.
Well, and that's part of the justification for what they've done up to that point, will be to try to go on the other side of a wipeout and prove that what they did, what they said, what they apparently stood for, was really what the country needed, but for a rigged election. So I can hear that narrative, but the hope, the light, the truth is that's bullshit and we know it. And so I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get into the nitty gritty of the politics of defeating that at the ballot box this November. You've already alluded to the idea of having, you know, flooding the zone, of getting a massive turnout of voters. Let's talk about how that may look in light of what the Republicans and the president are trying to do right after this. We'll be back with more with Steve Schmidt in a moment.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
All right, folks, as I was saying, we were talking with Steve about Lincoln Project. Now let's get into the heart and soul of what Steve and I know and have done and do so well, the nitty-gritty, the grind of getting votes to the polls, turning out that vote, the mechanics involved, and all of those attributes that we see are going to be necessary for what I think is going to be required, and you've talked about, Steve, in a massive turnout of voters. How are you assessing the run-up, the preparation, both of the Democratic Party as in the Biden campaign, as well as third-party groups out there, like Lincoln Project, as they're trying to funnel all of this down to November 3rd?
So I think, you know, if I was sitting on top of some magical hill and in charge of everything, right?
Right.
And I could wave a wand and I could, you know, direct all the spending, right? What I would say is this is a historic moment. The account is coming due for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a good run in the sense that he's evaded responsibility for anything in his life to age 75, but it's coming. And
Bill
it's coming
is due, baby.
Hard and it's coming fast and it's going to weigh down on him for every second for the rest of his life and his kids and the people who were his deputies mm-hmm. in this disgracefulness. It is coming due. Mike Espy can win this race in Mississippi.
Yes.
Against a nut Republican. There needs to be investment into Mississippi, right? Let's take the Mississippi Senate race. We've spent a lot of money in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Dr. Al is going to win that Senate race.
Yeah. Very well positioned, yeah.
Right? Lindsey Graham. Ugh. Lindsey Graham could lose, right? The state of Texas, right? It's not that the Biden campaign should be in the position of having to divert money from the 270 vote strategy.
Right.
But we need to collapse the walls of Trumpism, right? Money needs to flow into Texas. It needs to flow into Georgia, right? Ride to the front
mm-hmm.
and the field, right? Target as many races as you can. This SP race, for example, is real. The Kansas Senate race is real, right? The defeat needs to be as big and broad as possible, right? There should be ads that are going into Iowa and to Arizona that are brutal, that finish off the political career of McSally and Joni Ernst now.
Yeah.
Yep. Right, and begin yep. the final assault that leads to the final collapse of all of this. The bill is due. You know, I have no brook against Joni Ernst. You know, when Joni Ernst was elected to the Senate, I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, I did too.
Air Force Colonel, seemingly normal person, rose up against adversity. Taints a position of political power and rolls mm-hmm. over supine, voiceless, and enables this travesty that leads to mass death and suffering and economic collapse. She's got to go.
Yeah,
Susan Collins coming out after the debate. She has the gall to say there's blame on both sides. Blame on both sides. Like she's an incredible specimen. I mean, she truly is, right? Like I would say for all of these people, and I just want to speak if I can for a minute in my
No one's listening. It's just you and me talking. Go ahead.
I just want to speak in my native New Jersey, right?
With go ahead,
all
man.
These people, right, that are running for reelection. It's basically, let me get this right. You're an independent voice. I saw the ads. You're an independent voice. You will stand up and fight for me and my family as you've done. The reality is we have a buffoon in the Oval Office who we've all heard the tape now, lying to the country on 120 occasions in the middle of this pandemic. responsible because of that.
Right.
Returning us to the epicenter of this disaster in the world. 150,000 people that would be alive if we were Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Right. On him. On the lie. They all knew he was lying. Did any of them go to the Senate floor?
Not one.
Hey, stop it. What are you doing? Any of them walk into the Oval Office, bang their hand on the Resolute desk and say, knock it off. You're killing people. I'll denounce you if I have to. Any of them?
Not one.
Any of them? And now this guy's talking about we're not going to have a peaceful transition of power. He's saying lock and load to fascist militia groups, white supremacist groups. And their response is he didn't really mean it, or both sides are to blame. And now you're asking for the vote again? Get the fuck out of here. Every one of them. Kidding me?
I love Jersey, baby. I love Jersey. Keeping it street. Keeping it street. Well, that's true. And it, you know, and the thing that kills me about the very points you just made is that they look at you and they look at me when we go, wait, no. We're not backing this shit from this guy. We're not backing this SOB. They look at us like somehow we're getting it wrong. And I'm sitting there going, well, where did you turn off your compassion? Where did you turn off, as my mama said, your common sense? Where did you turn off your sense of responsibility to the people you serve in the face of the number of deaths in your own state, let alone nationally at 208,000? How do you shake that down? How do you then go out and look America in the eye and go, well, he just made a mistake. He really didn't mean it. You know, I didn't mean to put salt in my coffee, all right, because the containers look similar. All right, fine. I didn't mean to do that. But when I'm asked a direct question about something so fundamental about racism in this country, racist in this country, and your response in defense of this asshole is, oh, I think he made a mistake. Or, well, you know, there's just... they're bad people on both sides. But that's no different than Trump saying they're fine people on both sides. How do you make those distinctions? So in this moment, this is my challenge to the country, and you just put it out there so well, is wake the hell up. And yeah, this is a time of choosing. You're going to have to figure out where you stand. Do you stand with America or do you stand with Trump? I've seen that someplace. And I think it's powerful language. And I think it's important language. And it is the essence in the opportunistic truth of individuals like yourself, organizations like Lincoln Project, and the reason why we are the resistance, the reason why we resist turning off our compassion, we resist using our common sense, we resist the fundamental upheaval of our republic and all that it has stood for, despite its warts and its ugliness at times, despite the difficulties and the inequities. The one thing, the solid thread that we've had, Steve, is we can look each other in the eye at the best and the worst of times and say we're still Americans. Dr. King, as much as he fought against the system and fought against the racism and Jim Crow, never once denounced himself as an American, never once denounced America. He embraced it. He embraced its narrative. He embraced the fundamental truths of its founding documents. And yet we have this guy come in, literally shred the damn Constitution, crap all over the Bill of Rights, and put his fingers in the air against the American people, and we've got SOBs inside the Republican Party go, well, I'll get back to you on that. And they think on the other side of all of this, Steve, that they're going to be able to go before the American people and go, my bad. No, we were just kidding. No. We didn't mean any of that shit. No, believe us now. How does that work?
Yeah, I was listening to you, and I'm thinking, you know, for sure, right? In 1985, France, there wasn't a grandparent in the country who hadn't been in the French Resistance, right?
Right.
And, you know, look, you're going to have a lot of people who will be regaling us for years with tales about how they fought Trump from the inside, right? They fought to contain and constrain him, right? You know, but for Marco Rubio, right, we would have crossed that thin line that divides us from freedom and fascism. And
yeah, you don't know how hard it is to sit in those Senate lunches and you know, rail against Trump with each other.
Right, you know, it's, you know, the Rubio speech was only outdone by the Cruz speech until 85-year-old Inhofe got up. I mean, it's just a disgraceful moment, right? So tragic for the country, but you know, we have to understand now that we're a month out from ending this. We're a month out from ending it.
What's your word to people on that front? What are you telling people when in your interviews and in your conversations? What are you saying to people about the next 30 days? And I guess really, what are the marching orders you're giving them?
Well, what I want to say to people is: do not be afraid. Do not flinch. Do not tremble. Do not be intimidated. Be prepared to do your duty as an American citizen and to vote him out. Mm-hmm. And it is not enough. It's not enough to just vote. If you're voting by mail, you have to take the time and be attentive and put it in the right envelope.
Right.
Right. Ours is not to reason why right now about why you have to put it into two envelopes or other right. stupid shit.
Right.
Right. It has to go in the way it has to go in.
Right.
Every person you know, right, that could possibly fuck that up, make sure they don't.
Right.
Make sure they don't. Make sure so everybody true. You know is voting, participating. What are yeah. you doing, right? Do you have some disposable income that you can get into one of these Senate races to Mike Espy, to anyone? Donate. Do you have some time, right? Can you make phone calls? What can you do? Participate. Be involved, but in the end, be prepared to do your duty. Vote. And in the end, be prepared to do your duty as a citizen, which is to take to the streets, prepare for civil disobedience, prepare for peaceful protest at a massive scale.
Mm-hmm.
Should Donald Trump declare that he won an election that he clearly lost? We will not lay down the American Republic to Donald Trump in a declaration of victory when in fact he is lost. It will not happen in this country. We will show the world that, but this is a time to connect to the history of the country, to understand the meaning of struggle, to understand how we got to where we are today. And I don't mean how we got to Trump, I mean, how we got from 1776 to 2020,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? How generation after generation of imperfect people made the country stronger, more prosperous, freer, included more people in the idea and ideal. We're not going to end it now.
Mm-hmm.
We will not.
And folks, that's why he's Steve Schmidt. That's why I'm very happy to call him a friend and confidant. He is, he's got his finger on a pulse that hasn't been touched in a long time in this country. And we appreciate what Steve does and is doing to remind us why we are, as he said, exceptional. Steve, thanks so much for coming and sharing a little bit of time here on the podcast, man. I appreciate you, bro. You know that.
Always good to be with you.
And
my great friend.
We got a good fight ahead of us, and I'm glad I'm in the trenches with you, bro. I'm glad I'm in the trenches with you, and I think a lot of Americans are glad that you're the one among so many others charging up that hill. So just keep it strong, keep it live, keep it real, and everybody listen to what Steve said. Be prepared, take the time, educate, inform yourselves. Don't sit back and think someone else is going to get it done for you. Follow the instructions, put the envelope, put the ballot in the envelope and the envelope in the other envelope. Do the process, because there are a lot of folks out there who are hoping you get it wrong so they can throw your ballot out. That's the plan. They don't want to count it. They don't want to include it. They're looking for reasons and ways to get rid of it. So unite around that, be that moving force right into and beyond November 3rd, because we're gonna need every American linking arms and doing what they gotta do to keep this republic strong. Steve, thanks again. You guys know where to find me. Apple Podcasts, Twitter, at Michael Steele, Stitcher, Spotify, download, do that thing. Follow what Steve is up to, certainly at Steve Schmidt, S-E-S. He's got a huge following on Twitter, as we all know. And definitely check us out, the Lincoln Project. You know the videos, but there's a lot more going on. Tap in, there are resources there that you can access to get information on your ballots, to find out what's going on with the latest and greatest that's happening around the country as we get ready for November. Until next time, everybody, be safe, take care, and wear the damn mask.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. Lost Golf Balls.